Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, college football week 7. Time flies when you're having a good time, and this should be one of the most impactful college football weekends of the season. However, a little bit of a different format that you listeners have grown accustomed to over the years. You'll only have one voice breaking down all of the biggest games. I'm your host, Todd Furman, or at least normally that's the case, typically joined by Payne Insider. Both of us have the week off, so it's all Brad Powers all the time. And Brad, we know we're in good hands for you to try and dissect some of the biggest matchups, find some of the best value on the betting board, and you'll keep the lights on at the Bet the Board home office until we return next week. So without further ado, the floor is yours.
All right. Week 7 already of the college football season is upon us. Arguably the biggest week we've had so far this college football season as far as attractive ranked on ranked matchups here. And just so happens to be the week the guys, Todd and Payne, decide to leave it up to me to go solo. I don't know about you guys listening out there, but I'm under the Bill Belichick, Nick Saban philosophy of no days off during football season. So we'll wish the guys well in their travels to Tennessee. Enjoy what should be an outstanding game, one of the best games of the season. But here on the Bet the Board pod, we got to break down some games here, and I'm here to do it for you guys. We're going to get it kickstarted here in the Big Ten. It's a noon Eastern kick time on Fox. We got number 10 Penn State at number 5 Michigan. Right now, Michigan a 7-point favorite. Your total sitting right around 52 for this game. Haven't seen too much line movement from the open. There was actually a little bit of Michigan love in the first 24 hours, and then once it got to 7.5, we did see some sharp betting groups take a position on Penn State. Drove it down back through 7. There was some 6.5s, and we saw a buyback on Michigan. So a little bit of a split response as far as, you know, who's who on the game so far in the marketplace. As for me, my power ranks say Michigan is the play here. But I will say this. I understand the Penn State money. I think situationally it's a good spot for Penn State. They come in off a bye. And when you look at strength of schedule, obviously Michigan's schedule so far leaves a lot to be desired. I mean, statistically, Michigan's a far superior team when you look at yards per play margin, yards per game margin, points per game margin. So I get why Michigan's favored, and I get why my power ratings say that they should be favored by slightly more than 7 points, but I do understand the Penn State money. Let's talk matchup so far. As far as the power ratings do go, I do have both teams slightly up from the start of the season. I didn't take positions on either team as far as season win totals. I thought I was relatively in line with the market and pretty much have been so far this season. Haven't had a lot of anti-Michigan or pro-Michigan tickets. Same with Penn State. Haven't been against the Nittany Lions too much. Haven't been on them too much so far this season. So slight upgrades there. Michigan 6-0 for the second straight season, something they haven't done since 1976, 1977, Michigan clearly rebounded from the 2020 COVID season. Michigan's kind of had their way a little bit in the rivalry since Harbaugh took over. They won 4 of the 7 matchups. They covered 5 of the 7 matchups against James Franklin and company. We will start, though, with the Penn State offense against this Michigan defense. I think you got to start with Sean Clifford and his experience, which I think is a major positive if you're looking at the matchup for Penn State. You do have the much more experienced quarterback here in Sean Clifford, 38 starts under his belt. QBR hasn't great, though. I mean, number 53 in the country in QBR, you'd think a guy that's been a 3-plus-year starter would be a little bit better. He's taking care of the football a little bit better this year, only 2 interceptions so far. I think the story of Penn State's offense this year has been the improved ground game. Keep in mind, last year, no run game for Penn State a year ago. 108 rush yards per game. So what does Penn State do? Kudos for James Franklin. He's an excellent recruiter. Goes out and gets two of the top high school running backs in the country. Nicholas Singleton is one of them. He was arguably the top running back coming out of high school this past season. They also get Catron Allen. And boom, all of a sudden, Penn State's got a ground game. They're averaging nearly 200 rushing yards per game, nearly 100 more than they were a year ago. And if that holds true, that would be the second most rushing yards per game for Penn State, believe it or not, in the last 8 years for them. Now, they will be up against it this week, against a Michigan defense giving up only 82 rush yards per game. Michigan defensive stats are dominant. They're giving up less than 54% completion rates, 22 sacks. Last week, they really answered the bell in the second half, allowing 29 total yards to Indiana in that game. They had 7 sacks in that game alone. Mike Morris has really stepped up. You thought there'd be major question marks in the defensive line. You know, after watching the spring, I'll go all the way back to the spring game. After watching the spring game, it wasn't as big of a concern for me. You got a guy like Mike Morris. He has 5 sacks. So they've been playing well. Although, I think the caveat here is that Michigan really has only played one team that's had a legitimate offense. That was Maryland. And if you remember back in that game, I mean, Maryland got 400 yards on them, 27 points, moved the football pretty well. I mean, Michigan hasn't allowed pretty much anybody else anything, but haven't played anybody else. So I do think there's some hope here for the Penn State offense to have some success, at least better success than most Michigan opponents so far. Flipping over to the other side, Michigan's offense, you start with J.J. McCarthy doing really solid job, 78% completions, 9-1 ratio. But I think another negative here, and I guess I'm getting to the point where I understand the Penn State money earlier this week, this is his first real big test for the young quarterback. I know he got some significant snaps in the semifinals in the second half after the game was already decided against Georgia last year. But this will be, you know, the first time he's the clear-cut starter and he's playing a legitimate defense. Speaking of that defense, I mean, Penn State's rush defense just as good as Michigan. I expect them to stack the line, force J.J. McCarthy to beat them. Now, the problem with Penn State is you probably can beat them a little bit in the pass game. Purdue got 350-plus yards on them. They're allowing 260 pass yards per game. They haven't necessarily played a who's who of passing offenses. The one thing I do like about Michigan's pass offense, Ronnie Bell, career day last week against Indiana. They're starting to get a little bit healthy. Keep in mind he's coming off injury. Also, what helps a young quarterback is, you know, a really good running back. Blake Corum, number 3 rusher in the country. You know, 735 yards, 11 touchdowns. So, again, coming into this season, I thought this Michigan offense, at least from a personnel aspect at the skill position, as good as what they've had in the last 15 years as far as top level and depth there. And they've delivered. But again, I go back to one of my major handicapping factors of the game is, you know, Michigan's lack of strength of schedule. So I'm not sure we fully know how good this Michigan team is. Again, going back to the stats, say they're dominant. There's a reason why they're number 4 in my power rings. When you look at a yards per play margin of number 3 for Michigan, yards per game margin number 6, points per game margin number 3, they've done what they've needed to do against weak competition. That's get margin and look dominant doing so. But this will be their most resistance they've gotten so far this season. Again, Penn State off a bye. I understand the money, and I guess what I'm getting at is, even though my power ratings say bet Michigan, I haven't bet Michigan yet. And if push came to shove, if Payne wanted to slip me one of his $100 bills that he gets back, if he has anything left back from the trip, my money this week would be on Penn State in this game. I would take the +7s. But for me, just a lean on this one. Let's stay in Big Ten action. And a peculiar game if you're looking at just lines, because you have Minnesota at number 24, Illinois. And Minnesota, a 6.5-point favorite in this game. Relatively big line considering the total is under 40. And you have, I think the storyline here, one of many, is you got to start with the defensive side of the ball. If you like defense, this is the game for you guys. Scoring defense, Illinois number 1 in the country, Minnesota number 2. Total defense in the country, Minnesota number 1, Illinois number 3. So two legitimate defenses, although the competition for either team hasn't been that tough as far as the opposing offenses. So a lower scoring game, but Minnesota has taken significant money so far this week. The opening line for the game was 4. Somebody actually bet Illinois originally. I don't know if they were placating the market a little bit, but I said, thank you very much. I went ahead and laid 3 with Minnesota. And we saw, I wasn't the only one betting Minnesota, folks, because we saw a lot of money come in on the Gophers on Monday morning, and it continued to come in. And I'm not sure if we get the 7, but one of the reasons being that we're seeing money on Minnesota is not just, you know, it certainly isn't my big bankroll, I can tell you that, but it's the injury situation for Illinois. And I think you got to start off with that. Even though the Fighting Illini are off to their best start in more than a decade, they've been really good on the defensive side of the ball. They had several starters in last week's game against Iowa that were injured, including Tommy DeVito, whose status right now is up in the air as I'm recording this on late Tuesday night. Bielema said, you know, this included wide receiver Isaiah Williams, a couple of defensive starters. Bielema early in the week, the majority of all those guys should be back in time for Nebraska. That game, if you check on the calendar, though, is October 29th. That doesn't help you for this week on October the 15th. He doesn't think it's realistic for any of those 4 or 5 guys to be, you know, projected into the lineup or projected in this week's game plan. So that's a big reason why we've seen a lot of Minnesota money. You would think, hey, Tommy DeVito, Brad, come on. He's not worth that much to a point spread. I mean, the Illinois offense isn't that good to begin with. I'm here to tell you, I think it is about a 3-point downgrade down to Sitkowski, especially if you watch last week's game. I mean, I know Sitkowski has plenty of experience, but 19 attempts for 74 yards last week. He's playing Iowa's defense. I get it, but he's playing just as good of a defense this week in Minnesota. Number 4 pass efficiency defense in the country. DeVito, at least, you know, was completing passes, 69%, 9-2 ratio. Team did move the football a little bit, but besides the ground game. So it is a pretty legitimate drop-off here if DeVito cannot go for Illinois. And on top of it, if he does go, it's an ankle. He's re-aggravated it several times. So I question how, you know, effective he can be even if Tommy DeVito goes. Speaking, we'll start with the Illinois offense. On top of the question surrounding the quarterback, I will say a positive thing for the Illinois offense. Obviously, when you got the nation's leading rusher in Chase Brown with 879 yards already, that's a positive. Although, obviously, they're lacking a lot of weapons on the outside, especially if Williams can't go there. But I expect a heavy, heavy dose of Chase Brown on Saturday. It's a Michigan rush defense. I will say this, in their last game prior to the bye against Purdue, got exposed a little bit. Gave up 160 rushing yards, 5.9 yards per carry to Purdue. Obviously, Purdue is not a run-oriented team whatsoever, so that was a major red flag. Otherwise, it's been a really good start for the Minnesota defense. I really like their defensive coordinator, Joe Rossi. I think he's one of the most underrated in the country. I expect him to get probably a bigger defensive coordinator job or maybe even a head coach job soon, but that would be something to keep in the back of my mind that has me maybe a little bit worried, or at least a little bit caution, laying anything more than 6.5 or 7 here with Minnesota. Let's flip over to the other side of the ball, Minnesota's offense against this Illinois defense. The positive side, and probably another reason why Minnesota's taking money, off the bye, it looks like Mo Ibrahim, their outstanding running back, he's going to be back. He missed last week's game, or 2 weeks ago, their last game against Purdue, which was an upset loss for Minnesota. Outright is about a 9-point favorite. Minnesota, somehow, without Ibrahim, cannot run the football. I mean, 47 rushing yards. Keep in mind, their first 4 games, now it wasn't against good competition, but Minnesota averaged 295 rushing yards per game the first 4 weeks. That's with Ibrahim. 47 rushing yards without him. So I'm not saying he's worth a bunch to a point spread, but he might be one of those rare non-quarterback that's probably worth a point to the point spread. Especially considering that, you know, Minnesota's already down one of their top offensive weapons. I mean, Chris Ottman Bell, their wide receiver's out for the year. So they got some limited skill position talent there. So him getting back is a big major plus for Minnesota. Tanner Morgan's been there forever. He's having an okay season. You'd like to see him clean up the turnovers. He's got four interceptions already. He's up against it. I mean, you look at this Illinois defense. I mean, Randolph and Newton up front, 15 tackles for loss, rush yards per game, 67. That's all Illinois is allowing. I mean, it looks like one of Bielema's Wisconsin units, number one in the country in pass efficiency defense. They get after the quarterback, 20 sacks. Obviously, they don't give up anything, 8 points per game. But with that being said, who have they played offensively? Not that Minnesota is that great offensively, but, man, they're better than Iowa. They're better than Virginia. They're better than Indiana. They're better than Chattanooga. They're better than Wyoming. Wisconsin obviously had some issues offensively. That's a big reason why they fired Paul Chris. So even though Minnesota's not great offensively, I still think it's one of the best, if not the best, offense Illinois' defense has faced so far this season. So in a game where there's going to be very limited scoring opportunities, I do like the Big Ten team in Minnesota getting healthier, coming off a bye, playing the Illinois team, playing seven straight weeks, playing, you know, another physical game after Wisconsin and Iowa. They're banged up. They could have four or five starters out. The quarterback could be out. So I will say I took a big position on Minnesota early in the week, still lean that way even though we've seeing the line climb up all the way to 6.5. Anything under 7 is worth a decent bet for me, even at 6.5 here. So I do have a significant lean here on the Gophers as far as this one. Let's move along. A lot of games to get to this week. Let's go to the Big 12. 3:30 ABC kickoff for this one. Number 8, Oklahoma State at number 13, TCU. Now, TCU has taken a little bit of money in the marketplace. Game open, TCU 2, total 69.5. Now we're up to TCU, a 3.5-point home favorite in this one. When you look at, I mean, I'll say this. I mean, TCU is one of those teams where I've upgraded significantly, even though they kind of disappointed me last week. I'll get to more on that later, but I've upgraded TCU almost a touchdown. Even though Oklahoma State's coming in unbeaten, I got them relatively flat. In fact, I haven't been that impressed with Oklahoma State. More on that in a little bit. You look at yards per play margin, yards per game margin, points per game margin. TCU, the superior team in all of them. Both teams have played similar strength of schedule. So when you look at that, you look at the superior statistical team playing a similar schedule. They're at home. You get to understand why TCU is favored by 3.5. Because I needed that for me to break down this game, because I was wanting to bet Oklahoma State because my power ratings say TCU by 1. I'm here to tell you I'm not extremely confident in that power rating after I was breaking down this matchup for this podcast. We'll start on the offensive side of the ball for Oklahoma State. Spencer Sanders feels like he's playing his 10th season. That we can say that about a lot of players, including the TCU quarterback Max Duggan. Sanders playing well, obviously top 20 in the country in QBR. He's got 12-2 ratio. I'd like to see him, you know, complete a little bit better percentage, 61%. He's running the football, 6 rushing touchdowns. Oklahoma State offensively in the tape and the games that I've seen, I think it's a good offense. I don't think it's a great one. They do have a deep receiving core. I like Braden Johnson. He's a big deep play threat, averaging over 20 yards per catch. I don't see a dynamic running back, though, for the first time in forever for Oklahoma State. I mean, they're only averaging 4.1 yards per carry. I mean, that'd be tied for the lowest for an Oklahoma State team since 2015. And then you start looking at their games. I mean, they're outgained against Central Michigan. You're going to tell me, hey, Brad, a lot of that was garbage. I get it. But, I mean, Central Michigan still was moving up and down the field on that one. Obviously got the back door and then some in that game. But more importantly to me, even though Oklahoma State has 2 wins the last 2 weeks against Baylor and Texas Tech, 2 decent teams in the Big 12, outgained in both of them. And I'm not talking getting outgained by 5 yards. We're talking 75-plus yards in both games. So, you know, box score has not reflected scoreboard in each of the last 2 weeks for Oklahoma State. Now, with that being said, TCU on the defensive side of the ball got exposed. was in the second half last week against the backup Kansas quarterback. I mean, TCU's defense looked good early. I think they obviously benefited from the fumble at the goal line by Daniels, the starting quarterback for Kansas. But, I mean, 540 yards last week against mainly a backup quarterback going up and down the field wasn't a good look for TCU's defense. So even though I don't think this is one of Mike Gundy's best Oklahoma State offenses, I still think they can have success against this TCU defense. Let's flip over to the other side. We got Max Duggan, who's having his best year. And kudos for Max Duggan. I mean, he played for a defensive-minded coach in Gary Patterson. Now he plays in a very friendly quarterback system under Sonny Dykes, number five in the country in QBR, 14 touchdowns, one interception, 73% completions. I go back to the opener, and maybe you guys don't remember this, but Max Duggan didn't start the season. It was Chandler Morris against Colorado. And if you watch that game, TCU couldn't do anything offensively that first half. And let's face it, Colorado has turned out to be bottom five. Easily the worst power five team in the country. I'll be kind to them. Bottom 10 team in the country. Haven't covered a single game. I mean, that TCU offensive performance in the first half was abysmal. What happens? Chandler Morris, the starting quarterback, gets dinged. Max Duggan comes in. All of a sudden, TCU's offense takes off, and they haven't looked back. Last week, I mean, if you watch the Kansas game, the guy that had to stick out watching film, their wide receiver, Quentin Johnston, 14 receptions, 206 yards. He's 6'4", 212 pounds. To me, looks like a future first-round pick if he can stay and have some more consistency in his game. They got a good running back in Miller, averaging 6.9 yards per carry. A lot of things to like about this TCU offense. And I think they got a favorable matchup, because if you look at Oklahoma State's defense this year, they're allowing 430 yards per game, 304 pass yards per game. You compare that to a year ago, that's 132 yards per game more, including 96 pass yards per game more than last year. So what happened? Obviously, a lot of starters left last year's team, but more importantly, the guy, at least on tape to me, that they're missing is their defensive coordinator, Jim Knowles, the guy that was calling plays for him last year. Where's Jim Knowles at this year? He's at Ohio State, and Ohio State's defense is much improved, and it's a big reason why Ohio State's now the number one team in my power ratings. So that Oklahoma State defense is taking a couple steps back. Expect TCU's offense to have their way. Oklahoma State's offense is going to have their way. I know it's a high total at 69. I'll check the weather. I know there's some wind moving through the Midwest a little bit this week, but 69 looks a little cheap to me. I mean, keep in mind the TCU-Kansas game, depending on when you bet that one, it got steamed big time over. I mean, you bet earlier in the week, you cashed those tickets, even though it was 10-3 at halftime. And that was a game that had a total in the mid to upper 60s. And you had a dead nut under game that ended up, you know, getting close to wherever you bet it. So I'm expecting a track meet here. If push came to shove on the side, I would go with my power ratings and lean Oklahoma State. I just think that they might be a little bit more well-rested in this one. That they've had a more recent bye. TCU's, you know, played Oklahoma and Kansas the last 2 weeks. So just a lean there, but prefer over here. Let's get to the game that Payne and Todd are going to be at. I don't know if they're going to be, you know, down there on the water, next to the – it's one of the – I think Tennessee and Washington are only two places you can get to the game via boat. We'll see if they're doing that. Hashtag no days off. We don't take days off here, especially during football. But it's obviously not only one of the biggest games of this week. It's one of the biggest games of the season so far. And it has one of the biggest question marks of the season so far. And that's the status of Alabama quarterback Bryce Young. Saban on Monday said he's hopeful Bryce will play this week. Obviously, the shoulder soreness caused him to miss last week's game. It's been an injury that he's had for quite some time, obviously aggravated a big time in the Arkansas game. So I bring that up first because my power rings aren't just strictly stats-based. You know, I do the old-school power rings where I factor in the injuries. And factoring in for me, you know, less than 100% Bryce Young, I'm at, you know, Alabama right around seven here. Where's the line at right now? It's Alabama 7.5, although some places are moving towards seven. Where I did take a position earlier this week was we had an opening total of 66.5. I did take under, believe it or not. I mean, what, huh? You're taking an under in a Tennessee game? I just, you know, I question how healthy Bryce Young is. I certainly don't want to be betting over if Jalen Milroe is the quarterback for Alabama. And I also think Tennessee, Hendon Hooker doesn't look 100%. You know, Payne kind of, you know, noted this for me to rewatch the LSU game a little bit. And he's right. I mean, he's at least after a couple of runs there, he got up a little gingerly. Obviously, he's going to play. And you're going to say, hey, Brad, you know, no one's 100% this time of year. We're in the middle of October. But with that being said, I mean, there's a couple of reasons why I like the under. I also think if Alabama's going to win the game, you know, best defense for Tennessee, this offense is to play keep away. One thing that Nick Saban's played keep away with is preventing Tennessee from beating him. He's never lost to Tennessee while the Alabama head coach. 15 straight wins now for Alabama in this series. They haven't been close. He's won them by an average of 26 points per game. He's covered 11 of the 15 games by an average of 6 points per game. So even though he's been a big favorite in a lot of these, he's covered them. He's won the last six all by at least 22 points. So the fact that this line's sitting around a touchdown, you know, obviously says Tennessee has made some major strides in just 2 years under Heupel. But also this Alabama team has some weaknesses. And before I get to some of those weaknesses, let me tell you, I'll give you a little story from the summertime. So summer game of the years get opened up in June, early June at the South Point. I'm one of the three, four guys in line. I'm actually third in line this year. I let a couple of guys out of town ahead of me. And this line opened in June, Alabama 6.5. I'm here to tell you, we all wanted to bet it. We all did bet it. I got a couple guys ahead of me, got better numbers. I still was very happy I got Alabama 8.5. I think within 24 hours, the line was up to like Alabama 12 or 13 in the game just from a few bets that they took. And we were all pretty happy that we had Alabama tickets in our pockets, thinking we were going to have a lot of positive EV type bets once the game got played. And here we are, you know, 4 months later. They got an interest-free loan on my Alabama minus 8.5, Chris Andrews at the South Point, and I got the worst of the number. I think it took a lot to get to the worst of the number. Obviously, a quarterback injury question mark for Alabama, and obviously Tennessee far exceeding expectations so far, but my goodness, it just goes to show you folks, man, there are no locks in this industry, even when you think you have a really good bet. Let's talk, though, more about this game. I'm going to go with the Alabama offense to start. We've already mentioned it. Bryce Young, in my opinion, has to play if Alabama wants to win the game. Because if they want to get in a shootout, if Jalen Milroe is the quarterback, I have my doubts on whether they can be successful. When we saw Milroe last week against Texas A&M, three turnovers. Him personally, Alabama as a team, had four turnovers. That was the most in any game for them. Any game going back to 2015, 7 years. Four turnovers for Alabama. Speaking of turnovers, let me give you this. It's part of the reason why Alabama's been struggling a little bit this year. I'm just going to give you some stats. I'll start with 2015, plus 10. We're going from 2015 up to this year. Plus 10 for 2015. 2016, plus 10. 2017, plus 14. 2018, plus 6. 2019, this is the season, plus 18. 2020 season, plus 10. Last year, plus 8. This year, minus 5. What is that stat? That's turnover margin for Alabama. Worst that they've had by far in now 8 seasons for them. Number 115 in the country in turnover margin. And I mention it specifically because obviously Bryce Young takes care of the football. Only 3 interceptions so far this season. And then obviously Alabama 4 turnovers last week. Big reason why they struggled to even win the game outright as a big favorite against Texas A&M. So even if he's not 100%, Bryce Young needs to play here. And obviously Saban says he's hopeful he'll play. Market's telling you that, Young is probably 60 to 70% going to play. But I will say, as I'm taping this late Tuesday night, we've seen a couple books go to seven. So I think the next major move will tell you the status there. One thing I will mention Alabama needs to do, give Jahmyr Gibbs the football. Got to touch the football more. 8.3 yards per carry. He's only got 64 carries in six games. You guys can do the math there. 22 receptions. I just think he needs to touch the football five, six times more. And maybe they've been saving him up for the stretch here. But in this particular game, he needs to see the football more. Especially when you consider the Alabama wide receiver core, major downgrade this year from the last five, 6 years. I mean, Devontae Smith, Jameson Williams, John Metchie, Henry Ruggs, Jerry Jeudy, Jalen Waddle. I mean, all those guys are better than anything they have this year. And Holden Brooks, Burton. I mean, they expected the Louisville transfer Tyler Harrell to be a deep threat, take the top off defenses. He can't get healthy, can't play. It's just, but there's a reason why I'm saying Gibbs needs to touch the football more. He's their most dynamic weapon, both in the rush and the receiving game. So I expect a heavy dose of him. One thing else that Alabama hasn't been doing too well this year, penalties. Undisciplined, number 117 in the country in penalties. That's just not typical Alabama football. Although I will say this, it might not matter too much on Saturday. Tennessee's actually worse. So you might be seeing a lot of yellow flags. Tennessee's number 122 in penalties. Let's, you know, the Tennessee, I've talked a lot of Alabama offense. Tennessee defensively, rush D looks good. They're allowing less than 90 rush yards per game. Pass defense has me a little bit worried. I mean, that there's a big outlier. It's called giving up 453 passing yards to Anthony Richardson. And I'm here to tell you, if I knew Bryce Young was going to be 100%, even with a very limited wide receiver core that I'm not a big fan of, I still would expect him to have a field day against Tennessee's pass defense. So what is Tennessee going to do? If it's a less than 100% Bryce Young or Jalen Milroe, fully expect a lot of pressure. They'll dial it up. 14 sacks in the last four games. Remember, they hurt a couple of Pittsburgh quarterbacks earlier this year, so I expect a ton of pressure from Tennessee on this Alabama offensive line that, you know, when you look at it, I mean, Jalen Milroe took four sacks last week. I mean, Bama had allowed five sacks in the previous five games combined, four sacks last week. So, again, if it's less than 100% Young and a Milroe that had a propensity to take sacks, Tennessee could have their way, at least to getting pressure on the quarterback on Saturday. Let's flip to the matchup as far as I'm concerned, one of the best matchups we'll see in all of college football this season. That's the Tennessee offense against the Alabama defense. Who's going to win the battle? I mean, it's obviously you got the number one offense in the country in yards per game, number two in points per game. Hendon Hooker, top five in the country in QBR. He's actually number three. He's top five in the country in Heisman. He'd be a Heisman finalist if the season ended today. Hasn't thrown an interception all season. I go back to him. Is he really 100%? How many hits can he take in this game? When you look at the running backs, I think they got solid 1-2 punch. Jalen Wright, Jabari Small, Hyatt leads the receivers. Brooke McCoy's really stepped up in the absence of Cedric Tillman. I mean, last week McCoy had seven receptions for 140 yards. There is some optimism here that Tillman could come back this week. I mean, obviously with Hyatt, McCoy, and Tillman, that gives Tennessee, you know, a really, really good, you know, three guys at wide receiver, as good as any three guys in the country, maybe outside of Ohio State, when the Buckeyes are healthy. And, you know, if there's one weakness on Alabama's defense, we've seen it already in two games already this year. I mean, Texas and Texas A&M both had their moments in the pass game. I mean, Xavier Worthy, wide receiver for Texas, Evan Stewart last week against, you know, for A&M. Texas had almost 300 yards passing. That's with Quinn Ewers not playing, you know, three quarters of that game. A&M with a young quarterback who you know, is the backup, at least, you know, had been the previous three, four games. He had 250 yards and moved the football. Will Anderson starting to, you know, flash a little bit. He's got 10 tackles for loss. Bama's defense is starting to get to the quarterback, 18 sacks the last five games. They're going to have to get after Hooker in this one. Now, we've seen one team be able to do that, that being Florida. So I do think, you know, Alabama has the ability to put pressure on Hendon Hooker, because I'm here to tell you, if they don't, I think Tennessee will have their way offensively. But we'll see what Saban and company can dial up here. Again, just because of the quarterback injury issues for Alabama and just because of the perceived game plan, that I expect a heavy dose of more of the ground game for the Crimson Tide. Lean under for me. I have bet under. It's at 65 now. That's the only position I'm going to take as of right now in the game. I mean, if I knew Young was going to be a little bit more healthy than what he even looked in pregame, I mean, he didn't even attempt. They even tried to attempt a pass last week in the pregame before A&M. I maybe could talk myself into taking Alabama, but right now, no bet for me other than that idiotic bet that I guess I made in the summer that I thought I was going to have so much closing line value. So that is the game there for that Todd and Payne are attending. I do expect it to be relatively close, and I do expect they'll see a really good game. It'll be far closer than previous Alabama-Tennessee matchups, so they picked a good one to attend, I can tell you that. Let's move on, though, the SEC. LSU of Florida. And I know there's a lot of great ranked-on-ranked matchups this week. To me, this might be one of the most intriguing games, and maybe one of the most important games. When you look at, like, recruiting narratives for first-year coaches, you look at the future schedules, at least for this upcoming season, down the stretch for both of these teams. I mean, this is a big, big game for Mr. Brian Kelly and Billy Napier at Florida. They're doing well both on the recruiting front. I know you're going to tell me, it's just for a first year. It's not going to matter too much. As far as those fan bases, temperatures, I think both could ill afford a loss here, because a loss, I think the loser of this game is heading towards a 6-6, 7-5 type of season. And that's not going to make many fans happy, either in Gainesville or Baton Rouge. Game, Florida, favored by 2.5. The opener was Florida 3. I can tell you, I took the 3 on LSU there, just key number. You know, Power Ring said Florida by 2. I mean, key number, off a point. That's a bet for old Brad Powers. Not that I necessarily am in love with this LSU team. More on that in a second. But when you look at just some of the basic, you know, yards per play margin, Florida actually has the edge there. I was surprised. I mean, Florida's number 21 in the country in yards per play margin. I'll mention a big reason, part of that, has actually got me stunned looking up some stats from the past. Yards per game, LSU's a little bit better. Points per game, LSU's a little bit better. But I'm here to tell you, I think obviously their games against New Mexico and Southern have a lot to do with it. Two big blowout wins. Strength of schedules have been relatively even for both teams. So I made it Florida 2 as far as the pure power rating. Right now it's 2.5. So not too much there as far as trying to find value. Breaking down the matchup, though, I mean, LSU offensively, normally I start with the quarterback. More on him later, but I think you start with LSU, this handicap of LSU's offense against Florida's defense. LSU's offensive line in really, really bad shape. Statistically, they've allowed 21 sacks so far this season. Where's that rank? Bottom 10 in the country. And then you just look at how healthy they are, or lack of health on the offensive line. Their left guard, Dellinger, who's been moving around this season, he's out for the game. Probably misses the next 2 weeks. Left tackle, Will Campbell, had like a medical issue where he collapsed. They had to call the ambulance onto the field in the walkthrough. He's likely unavailable this week. So what LSU is going to be looking at is most likely their six different starting combination on the offensive line already this season. You look at Anthony Bradford. He replaced Campbell left tackle. He struggled last week against Tennessee. They allowed 2 sacks. Bradford, if you're looking at it matchup wise, I mean, he's a better fit inside a guard. He was their best run blocker against Auburn. Xavier Hill's another guy that had to fill in last week. He also allowed a sack. So, I mean, they were young to begin with. You knew it was going to be a problem and a weakness this year. Payne and Todd talked about it in the offseason preview, and it's in worse shape than what even they expected. So that would be a worry here, even with me sitting here with an LSU plus 3 ticket. And when you look at the wide receivers, I like Malik Nabers. Obviously, Kayshon Booty's been a non-factor. But when you look at LSU offensively, and I know the LSU fans listening to this right now don't want to hear this because he's drove them nuts so far, but best player so far on your offense has been Jaden Daniels at quarterback. I mean, I know he's been careful with the football. You'd like to see him take more chances. You'd like to see him be more accurate. But the reality is he's only thrown one pick. Interceptions were a problem at Arizona State at his last stop. He's number 26 in the country in QBR. He's completing almost 70% of his passes. He by far leads the team in rushing. The best offensive play LSU has is a third down scramble by Jaden Daniels. So, I mean, he's all you got right now. I know you guys won't want to pull him and put in Nussmeier, but did you watch Nussmeier in the Auburn game? Wasn't a great look as far as I was concerned. I will say there's going to be some, even with a bad offensive line, there's going to be some opportunity against this Florida defense. It's not a great Florida defense. They're allowing 436 yards per game. If somehow, some way, they can get the ground game going a little bit. Florida did give up 200-plus rushing yards to Utah, South Florida, Tennessee. Pass rush for Florida starting to come on a little bit. They got 9 sacks the last 3 games. I thought their defense saved the day last week against Missouri, pick 6 particularly in that game. So, but that being said, LSU offensively, I think, can have some success here. Might be one of the reasons why we've seen a little bit of over money come in this week. Open 48.5, it's up to 51.5. Other side of the football, Florida's offense against LSU's defense. I'll start with Anthony Richardson. Just when you thought Anthony Richardson was improving as a passer, throws for 453 against Tennessee. Has nearly 400 yards. I know it's in the FCS defense, but still, 400 yards is 400 yards. And then what does he do last week? 66 yards. 66 against Missouri. Not even in the top 60 in QBR. He's got a negative touchdown to interception ratio, 5-7 on the season. 5 straight games with a turnover. Florida's offense really struggled. 65 total yards in the first half last week. I mean, not playing the 85 Bears either, Missouri's defense. One thing I will say as a positive for Florida's offense has been the ground game, particularly Montrell Johnson. He's a guy that kind of stood out to me in the spring game going all the way back. He's lived up to the billing, 8 yards per carry. Trevor Etienne, another good weapon out of the backfield for him. I was looking at it. I saw Florida, 6.4 yards per carry as a team. That's pretty good. When's the last time they averaged that? How about never? Even those Percy Harvin, Tim Tebow offenses never averaged 6.4 yards per carry. So even though I don't think it was a dominant Florida offensive line when evaluating them in the offseason, even though I didn't expect them to be that great in the ground game, they are finding some opening running lanes here. It started against Utah in the opener. And for it's really shocking considering how bad Richardson is as a passer. You'd think teams would be able to load up and stop him on the ground, but that just hasn't been the case. So that's been a relatively highlight of Florida's season so far. As far as the game goes, again, I go back to it. It was LSU plus 3 or nothing. I fully understand the line where it is now. I'm not sure that I want an over piece now after the 3-point line move. I go back to what I said at the top. I think it's a really intriguing game. You're going to learn a lot about both teams. And I also think you're going to learn a lot about both moving forward as far as what it's going to look like the rest of the season. Because you look at the rest of these two teams, the rest of what they got on the schedule, there's probably multiple losses coming their way. So winner will get some positive momentum. Loser, again, heading towards a 6-6, 7-5 season. So LSU, Florida, really intriguing game. But obviously there's other options on Saturday night. Speaking of other options, I have in my hand, if you can hear that, it is a contract from Mr. Payne. And it says that I have, no matter what, even when he's not here, hashtag no days off, I have to talk about Florida State. I get it. It's a big game this week. I didn't want to do it. I said, I mean, come on, Payne. I mean, they've lost back-to-back games. Do I really want to talk about Florida State this week? I don't, honestly. I mean, maybe one of the reasons why Payne's not here, forget all that hubbub about the trip to the Tennessee for the game, the wedding, all that stuff that's going on there. Maybe he just didn't want to show up after what Jordan Travis did late Saturday night, which is throw back-to-back interceptions, probably the two worst interceptions I've seen as far as moment in time, you needing not to turn it over, and then you do exactly what you shouldn't do. I mean, that was a bad look for Florida State, a game that they should have absolutely won against a backup quarterback in NC State. So I think that when you're looking at this matchup against Clemson, all jokes aside, I think people are stunned by the line. And that's Clemson favored by only 3.5 points. Top five team against an unranked team, only favored by 3.5. And the opening line was Clemson 5, so the early money's been on Florida State. And then you dive in to the stats. So if I told you this, would you be surprised if Clemson was only laying 3.5? Florida State's played the tougher schedule. Florida State, yards per play margin. Very basic stat. I'm sorry, I don't have the advanced analytics this week that Payne and Todd usually have. That's just not me. I love that they rely on that. I think it's great. I think it's the wave of the future. It's just not personally what I do when I'm breaking down a game. I just go to the basics. Give me the meat and potatoes. And you look at Florida State from a yards per play margin, number 13 in the country. Clemson, number 27. Florida State's better, and that's against better competition, too. Florida State yards per game, better than Clemson. Now, scoring margin, not so much, but obviously you go back and start going through Florida State's games, and they had a mess up at the goal line against LSU when they could have, took game control there. They also, probably should have settled for the field goal last week, and they missed some scoring opportunities there, so the scoring margin should be better for Florida State, but when you look at yards per game, yards per play, margins, two very basic stats, Florida State's better despite playing better competition. So that is one of the reasons why when diving in and I saw my power rating said 3.5, the line says 3.5, I'm not at a bet right now. But breaking down the Clemson offense versus the Florida State defense, I think you got to start with DJ Uiagalelei. I mean, look, he misses throws. Still, a lot of them each week, but no question he's improved as a passer. Number 29 in the country in QBR. Doesn't sound great, but it's better than last year. He's got a 14-2 ratio, 64% completions. Last year, 56% negative touchdown interception ratio last year, 9-10. He's running a little bit more. Obviously, he dropped 30 pounds in the offseason. That's helped out the offense a little bit. I will say Will Shipley at running back, he's been okay. I mean, 446 yards, 5.9 yards per carry, 8 touchdowns. I mean, I think a lot of people would take that from your starting running back. But I kind of expected Will Shipley to be a top 5, top 10 running back in the country. So far, haven't seen it yet this year. Collins, Williams, Nagata, solid, that wide receiver. It's not going to give you memories of what what Clemson had at wide receiver a few years ago with Trevor Lawrence. I'll tell you that. On the defense side of the ball for Florida State in the matchup, they've been solid, especially when you consider they've been dealing with injuries. So I don't see a clear-cut edge here. Clemson's offense versus Florida State's defense, maybe slight edge for Clemson there. I think the bigger story is on the other side of the ball for me. And big question. And I actually wish Payne was here. He'd give me the inside info on this. But a leading rusher for Florida State, Trayshawn Ward, early word is he didn't need surgery. So that's good news for him, at least for the rest of the season. But I think at best he's questionable here. He's their leading rusher. He's averaging 6.8 yards per carry, almost 500 yards rushing already this season. I will say I like Benson and Toa Fili. They're two backups. They run really hard. But when you're playing Clemson on that front, you would like to be 100% healthy, especially at running back. So that could potentially be a big missing piece for that Florida State offense. And speaking of the offense, has it been leaking a little bit the last couple of weeks? I mean, they haven't been able to top 400 yards in any of the last couple of games. How does Florida State's quarterback, Jordan Travis, respond? I was reading an article before I did this. I mean, usually they said Jordan Travis, even keel, isn't very emotional, good and bad. But he had a ton of emotion after both interceptions last week. So how does he respond? I'd like to think that he does, because I think he's, so far this season, been one of the more improved passers. I mean, he only had one interception all season prior to that fourth quarter against NC State last week. So just more regression as far as I think we'll see more of the player that we saw earlier in the year, and just he had a bad quarter. But what gives me a little bit of pause, I think Clemson defensively is getting also healthier. Keep in mind, the game against Wake Forest, they're missing three guys in the secondary. They get them back, and they're still kind of struggling a little bit pass defensive-wise. I mean, they are giving up 256 yards per game, but Brian Brzee, the outstanding Clemson defensive lineman, he's going to be back this week. He's missed a couple games, not only due to injury, but obviously the tragedy in his family losing his younger sister. But from all intents and purposes, I'm hearing he's back this week, so that's not good news for Florida State. But if there is a bright spot, I do think that they can have some success in the pass game. Johnny Wilson, 19 yards per catch so far this season. He's a big body guy that I think Clemson defensively will struggle with. But I guess what I'm getting at is, even though that line seems really short, I'm not there yet on either side or total here. This is one where I do, all jokes aside, I wish Payne was here to lead me in the right direction, because last time there was a peculiar line with a Florida State game. They were showing a lot of love against Wake Forest. A lot of guys that I respect bet Florida State in that game against Wake Forest. It seemed like a pretty big line considering how good Wake Forest looked against Clemson the week prior. And Payne was right there to say, hey, I don't like the matchup here this week. I know everyone's in love with Florida State. They're going to beat Wake Forest, and he was concerned. And obviously Wake Forest beat them. So I'll have to see if I can get Payne via text or something in the next couple days to get a good read on this one. But right now, no play for me. One more as far as a deep down breakdown here. Let's go USC Utah. Number 7 USC, number 20 Utah. One of the bigger games in the Pac-12 this season. Obviously USC's lived up to the billing. Utah hasn't. When you look at my power ratings, actually, I mean, and the line, Utah favored by 3.5. That's right in line with my power ratings once again. So I hate to be a bore there. But, I mean, obviously I've downgraded Utah a little bit since the start of the season. I've upgraded USC a little bit since the start of the season. Statistically speaking, the teams are relatively close. I mean, Utah's a little bit better yards per game. Yards per play, USC is better. Points per game, they're about dead even. They played similar schedules. So, I mean, I understand where the line is, where it's at now. The question I have, and it's kind of surprising to me. I'm not surprised that money's come in on the over so far. It opened 60.5. It's up to 65. But, I mean, I'm not surprised because USC totals seem to take over money every week. But, I mean, are they paying attention to these USC team, both offensively and defensively? I started on the offense side of the ball, the USC offense versus the the Utah defense. I mean, USC's offense, first three games, 500-plus yards in all three games. Last three, they haven't topped 370 yards. Caleb Williams doing his thing, top 15 in the country in QBR, 14 touchdowns, one interception. Jordan Addison, I will say, was banged up a little bit last week, but I think he'll go. Mario Williams is there. I really like, and I think the matchup that actually favors USC, and I can't believe I'm saying this, because start of the year I would have said, Utah will have their way, as far as the line of scrimmage. Utah's defensive line versus USC's offensive line. USC running back Travis Dye. I mean, everybody else on that offense seems to get the headlines. Williams, Addison Williams, Mario Williams, and Caleb Williams. But Travis Dye, almost 600 rushing yards already. Runs really, really hard. Runs as hard as any running back in the country. He just pops on tape when you're watching the game. And really hits the hole quick. Even though he's a proven commodity coming out of Oregon, this is the best he's looked in his entire career. So I think they'll be able to have some success in the ground game. Why? Because Utah's run defense was gashed against Florida. Charbonnet and UCLA gashed him again last week in the loss. So, to me, I mean, it's a little bit of a surprise. Utah's not dominating the line of scrimmage as expected, and I think USC can have some success. Now, one thing, obviously, Utah does have a shutdown corner in Clark Phillips, so he'll be able to take at least one of those wide receivers away. It'll be interesting to see what the game plan is from Morgan Scalley. On how he defends everybody else, because I haven't been that impressed. Obviously, UCLA with a lot of weapons last week, and I lost a bet. I was on Utah, and I knew I had I probably knew I had a loser before the game even started with the way the market reacted. It'll be interesting to see where the market reacts on this one, because There's a lot of pro Utah money early last week. I was part of it. And then Wednesday afternoon, the anti-Utah money started to show. So it'll be interesting to see where this one moves. Let's flip on the other side of the ball. Utah's offense versus USC's defense. Cam Rising's having a good year. Although I question at least the success that they have down the field. To me, they're just missing something this year. Whether it's, you know, a slot receiver, Britton Covey, that they had for felt like a decade. There's certainly, like Payne mentioned in last week's podcast, Keithy at tight end. That really gave them a unique offensive dynamic with a 1-2 punch at tight end with Keithy and Kincaid. Now it's just Kincaid. I mean, Vele's all right at wide receiver, but they're just missing some pieces compared to what they had a year ago. Running back, Tavion Thomas, to me, he's not running as hard this year as he was a year ago. I mean, maybe it's some of the issues that they're having on the offensive line. Again, like the Utah defensive line, the Utah offensive line to me is disappointed, and they haven't dominated like they should have. So I flip over. I'm not sure that they're going to be able to dominate and have their way against USC, because if one thing you've been watching USC recently, I'm talking not the start of the season, I'm talking the last couple of games, they're certainly getting pressure on the quarterback, 24 sacks this year. I'm here to tell you, Tui Pelotu, number one in the country with 7 sacks. He was a stud against Washington State last week. They've had 3 straight games defensively where they've allowed less than 335 yards. That was a defense that we thought was a major weakness early in the season, but they've exceeded expectations the last 3 weeks, while the offense has, you know, not lived up to expectations. So I guess what I'm getting at is I'm a little surprised to see a ton of money on the total. So I'm probably going to have a position under. I'll wait and see how high it climbs, but that would be my preference right now. I will say one other thing, bringing up game of the year lines, because I know like Todd, he likes bringing them up. This one, more than any game since I've been doing this, and they've been doing game of the year lines, what, a decade or so now. I've never seen a game with such disparity as far as a summer power rating. One book, South Point, they opened up Utah 12 in this game. I was 3rd in line, didn't get 12, but I got USC plus 9. At the same time, this amazed me in the marketplace. There was a book that had USC minus 3. So you had one book that graded this game Utah minus 12 in the summer. You had another book USC minus 3, 15-point difference, just there, just shopping. You don't have to be Elon Musk to figure some of this stuff out as far as a possible middle. So I do have plus signs on both teams. That's significantly better numbers. So I'm just going to stay hold with those positions most likely for right now. If I had to lean, it would be USC plus 3.5, believe it or not, just because I'm stunned at Utah's lack of success at the line of scrimmage. Even though I think the situation calls for Utah, even though I expect them probably to play their best game of the season, I'm not sure it's going to be enough, to be perfectly honest with you. If it wasn't enough against a Florida team that loss hasn't necessarily aged well, and they really didn't have a shot last week against UCLA. That wraps it up as far as the 7 key breakdowns. I do want to mention, this is Bet the Board, so let me mention, because it's a very deep card this week. Let me mention a few other games, quick hitters here, I'll call it. Kansas at Oklahoma. You got top 20 Kansas team against an unranked Oklahoma team. You got Oklahoma favored by 9. I'm just here to tell you, why is it 9? Jalen Daniels likely out for Kansas. Dylan Gabriel for Oklahoma likely in. Just an FYI before you rush to bet Kansas there after Oklahoma's been demolished the last couple of weeks. Iowa State at Texas. If you're looking situational spot, a lot of money's been on Texas. I get it. I got Texas up to, I believe, number 6 in my power rings right now. Here to tell you, though, a 49-0 win against Oklahoma. You got 11 a.m. local start time. You got Oklahoma State on deck. You got a team that it's tough to get margin on Iowa State. That line gets to 17. That is a go for me on Iowa State, just telling you, against Texas. NC State at Syracuse. This is another ranked-on-ranked matchup. I'm not going to rank down why, because it looks like Devin Leary's probably out for NC State. It's a good spot for Syracuse off a bye. NC State's off very physical games against Clemson and the unlikely win against Florida State. So there's a reason why there's been money on Syracuse and why they're favored by more than a field goal there. So just an FYI on that one. I think one of the more intriguing handicaps of the entire year, Arkansas, BYU. Ton of money on Arkansas so far. What does that likely tell you? KJ Jefferson, who sat out last week, he's going to likely play. Even though it's not necessarily a good spot for Arkansas. I mean, seven straight weeks, you're traveling a unique travel spot. You're playing in elevation. But BYU against better competition this year, I mean, I won't bring up Baylor if somebody can make a kick. Against Oregon and even against Notre Dame, wasn't good looks. And on top of it, Jaren Hall, their quarterback, he'll play, but he's not 100% for BYU. So that's why we've seen money on Arkansas. Another ranked-on-ranked matchup I want to briefly mention. Mississippi State at Kentucky. Will Levis, the quarterback for Kentucky. Big news last week. He is a surprise out in that game. He's in a walking boot, doesn't play against South Carolina. The market goes crazy midweek and late week, and we see a significant line move there. He did practice on Tuesday. He's trending in the right direction. Look for Kentucky money, in my opinion, to show. As I'm taping this, they're a 6.5-point underdog in that one. If he plays, that'll close closer to 3, as far as I'm concerned. Now, I mean, we won't go best bet material because Payne and Todd aren't here to do that. It's their podcast. But what we've been doing, if you've been listening so far this year, we've been doing some non-Power 5 games that I've been highlighting. And I want you to wink, wink, hint, hint, take a look at, possibly getting involved. This week, I'm going to go to the Sun Belt, Arkansas State at Southern Miss. It's a simple handicap for me. Southern Miss is favored by 4. Pure Power ratings for me make it 6. You look at simple, basic stats. Southern Miss, plus 0.3 in yards per play margin on the season. Arkansas State, negative 1.3 yards per play margin. On top of it, Southern Miss has played the tougher schedule. They have the far superior basic stats. I still think Southern Miss, market-wise, is hurt by their quarterback situation. Late last year, earlier this year, they were banged up at the position more than any team in the entire country. Keep in mind, they had running backs taken and starting for them at the end of last season, playing Wildcat. I finally have some stability, although, I mean, the quarterback did throw 3 interceptions last week. But I think they bounced back this week, laying a reasonable number. I think we're going to see some more steam on this one. Like we saw also on Tuesday, Southern Miss minus 4 for me. That's one to take a peek at on the non-Power 5. That's going to do it for me. I went about an hour. If you hear me maybe licking my lips, it's because I was running out of breath. I probably should have taken a drink of water throughout all that. I hope you could take an hour straight of Brad Powers, the hour of Powers, the Powers hour, whatever you want to talk, whatever you want to call it, but that's just me simply breaking down the games to the best of my ability. Not a lot of, as far as the top 7 games of the week, I didn't have a lot of significant bets in those games besides a big position on Minnesota early in the week. But other than that, I hope that did the trick for you. I will say this. Can you do me one favor? Give me some feedback, positive or negative, on how I did. And the other feedback we're looking here on Bet the Board is you can follow us on Twitter, at Bet the Board Pod, at Todd Furman, at Payne Insider, or at Brad Powers, the number 7. That's going to do it for me. I want an hour. I think I could do that more often. But we will certainly welcome back Payne and Todd. Happy safe travels for them. Hope they have a really good time. And I look forward to talking to them next week. And I look forward to talking to you guys next week. So take care. Enjoy the big weekend of college football.
I can only imagine the cheap shots, Brad, that you took at us with us not here to defend ourselves, but outstanding work as always. Can't wait to see how this college football weekend unfolds. And honestly, if you happen to find yourself in Knoxville for the Alabama-Tennessee game, we know Payne is a little camera shy and such, but come seek us out. We're really looking forward to what should be a tremendous matchup between two SEC teams vying for a little relevance as far as the national championship is concerned, and maybe the biggest game in Knoxville in the last 20 years. I want to thank all of you for tuning in as you always do. Best of luck with all of your college football week 7 investments. Special thanks to Brad Powers for running solo this week. And like we said, tremendous job. There is no better analyst out there anywhere to get your bang for the buck. So best of luck with all of your week 7 investments, and hopefully we'll see you at the window.
Thanks for listening to Bet the Board. You can catch Todd and Payne every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday during football season, breaking down the biggest NFL and college football games. And to make sure you don't miss any free best bets, subscribe to Bet the Board on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.